Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics Podcast. This week, industrial relations is jostling with tax reform in prominence in the political debate. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has made a not-so-thinly-veiled threat of a double dissolution as the government tries to get crossbench support for a bill to reinstate the Australian Building and Construction Commission. The threat may or may not be real, but it has certainly grabbed attention. Minister for Employment Senator Michaela Cash is at the sharp end of the battle over the legislation, which is opposed by Labor and the Greens. She joins us today. Michaela Cash, how are you going in these negotiations with the crossbenchers on this bill?
Well, I'm sitting down with the individual crossbenchers constructively and are working through any issues that they have. I have some support for the bill from some of the crossbenchers, and with others we're still working through issues. But my door is always open. This is good policy. This is policy that if the Australian Building and Construction Commission is reintroduced, we believe the evidence is there to show that it will contribute to a more productive building and construction sector, bigger sector, more jobs for Australians. That's a good thing. And certainly that's what I'm talking to the crossbenchers about.
But you don't have the numbers yet?
Not at this stage, no.
What's your timetable on this? Are you still looking for a resolution by the time Parliament rises in March for the autumn break?
Yes, I am. And I've been very open about the fact that the government has a package of legislation that it would like to bring before the Parliament in this particular sitting. The first is the Australian Building and Construction Commission legislation. We've always maintained our commitment to that policy, and now one of our responses flowing from the Hayden Royal Commission is to reintroduce that legislation. Given that the legislation is in the identical form as it was the first time it was voted against in the Senate, nothing has changed. I'm hoping that we can turn the debate around very quickly and come to a resolution on the bill. That will enable me then to bring another package of reform before the Parliament, which is in relation to, of course, registered organisations.
Now, of course, it has been knocked back once. It's coming back, as you say, in the same form, or is back in the lower house. And that, of course, would make it a double dissolution trigger bill.
It would. And I often remind people that, the government already has a double dissolution trigger on two bills, one in particular, the Registered Organisations Commission Bill No. 1, or ROC 1, as it's called. That just happens to be a legal fact. If the ABCC legislation is rejected by the Senate for a second time, yes, it does become a double dissolution trigger. Will the government exercise the double dissolution trigger? Well, look, that's something that the Prime Minister himself would obviously decide. But certainly to date, the Prime Minister has openly said that he believes that we will go to the polls in the second half of this year.
Of course, you've got another trigger on a climate bill, which
we have as well.
Has
yes.
forgotten about long ago.
Yes, we have. So in terms of then the focus sort of being the ABCC, you were right. We already have two triggers. They are already there. My focus is obviously to work with the crossbench. Labor and the Greens have made their position very clear. They are not supporting the restoration of the Australian Building and Construction Commission. They don't want to support good policy. They're prepared to sort of see the Building and Construction Commission remain in a state of unlawfulness. But certainly the majority, crossbench, happy to sit down and talk to me, and certainly that's what I'm doing.
Now, one of those crossbenchers, David Lionhelm, has indicated he'd support the bill if it included a sunset clause. Have you any positive view on this?
Look, I have, and I am happy to say to other crossbenchers, and I certainly have in my negotiations, David has raised that with me, and I am prepared, if that was, if we accepted that, and then we could get the support for the legislation to go through, yes, I would accept an eight-year sunset clause. The reason being, the ABCC, when it was first in operation, operated for about 6 years before the Gillard government took away its powers. In that 6 years, what you effectively saw was the temperature in the building and construction industry around Australia literally lower. There were fewer days lost due to industrial action. That's a really good thing, because fewer days lost due to industrial action equals greater productivity. Greater productivity ultimately means more things are being built, more people are needed, you know, on these projects, and more jobs for Australians. So I think in 6 years, we were able to show that the ABCC can have a material difference in ensuring compliance with workplace laws within the sector. So certainly, I think if we were given the chance again over 8 years, we could again prove a material benefit to the Australian people, to the Australian economy, in relation to a standalone regulator.
Can you prove any deterioration in the period since it's gone?
Yes, basically, within about 2 months after the Gillard government had watered down the powers of the ABCC and had turned it into the Fair Work Building Commission expectorate, I think, you know, all Australians, I believe, you know, would have been horrified at what was happening on the streets of Melbourne. You know, who can forget those photos, quite literally, of, you know, CFMEU members, you know, people on strike, the police, the horses were brought in, you know, the mounted police, literally stopping construction in the middle of the Melbourne city, the Grocon dispute. You know, the CFMEU were acting in breach of lawful orders. So yes, literally you can tie that to, under the ABCC, the temperature went down. Literally within weeks/months of the change in powers of the regulator, you saw heightened industrial activity. And certainly there has been an increase compared to other industries in terms of days lost due to industrial action since the ABCC was abolished.
Of course, it does curb workers' rights, and there will be arguments for more protections to be built in. Would you be amenable to any amendments around that area?
Look, Michelle, I disagree with the comments that are made, and in particular by Brendan O'Connor, that the bill curbs workers' rights. There are 3 to 4 differences between the ABCC and the Fair Work Building Commission inspector. So those differences are, we are going to increase the penalties back to what they were before Labor slashed them by 2/3. I think, you know, all Australians can probably see that the current penalties are not acting as a deterrent. They're just not high enough. They were slashed by 2/3. In fact, the analogy in the paper the other day was that it's almost like you speed, you get a fine, you pay it. You speed, you get a fine, you pay it. You speed, you get a fine, you pay it. You've got to really reconsider whether or not that fine is high enough. So first difference, we'll increase the penalty substantially so they act as a deterrent. The second difference is in relation to the ability of the commissioner under the ABCC to pursue a prosecution even when the parties have entered into a private settlement. So, for example, employer and a union potentially get together and breach the law. The ABCC or the Fair Work Inspector comes along and says, I think there's a potential breach of the law. The parties enter into a private settlement. Now, we don't know what that private settlement is. Currently, the building inspector is not able to pursue a prosecution. We say that's wrong. If the law is potentially broken, the law is potentially broken. It does not matter that the parties have settled into a private settlement. So we will be enabling the Australian Building and Construction Commissioner to pursue a prosecution if required, regardless of a settlement. The third difference is in relation to the compulsory powers. The powers that the ABCC has to compel witnesses to give evidence are the exact same powers that the current Fair Work Building Commissioner has. The exact same powers. The only difference is the current Senate voted to extend those powers until the 30th of June 2017, at which point there was the sunset clause. All we're saying is, if those powers are good enough for this building inspectorate, why shouldn't they continue to go on? Because, you know, a lot of the evidence in the industry is, if the regulator or the inspector does not have the power to compel you to give evidence, you won't give evidence because you can't. They actually, it's a protection for the witnesses. I have compelled you to come and give evidence. You didn't come and tell on someone on your own account. So again, same powers, We're just going to continue them on past the 30th of June 2017. The final difference, and I think this is a fundamental difference, is in relation to the beefed up building code. To tender for Commonwealth Government work, you have to comply with the Federal Building Code. That was substantially watered down under the Gillard government. We are going to beef that back up and have some very, very strict laws in place for those employers who want to tender for Commonwealth Government work. If you breach those laws, you will not get Commonwealth Government work. That's a pretty serious penalty available to employers not being able to tender for government work. So when you break it down like that and you look at the four key differences, I don't believe the Australian public are going to be fooled by the Labor Party scare campaign, given in particular the evidence that is there to show that when the ABCC was in power, the industry, within reason, complied with the laws that apply to it.
Now, just turning to the registered organisations, as you said, this has been through already, and it's a double dissolution trigger already. Do you intend to change that legislation when you bring it again?
Yes, we do. So the first package of legislation that we brought before the Parliament was an election commitment, and it was very much in response to what we had all witnessed for a number of years coming out of the Health Services Union scandal. Okay, so we brought in a package of legislation and it was knocked back by the Senate. Now we have the outcome of the Hayden Royal Commission. And the findings of the Hayden Royal Commission indicate that a much stronger response is required. So we are now considering all of those recommendations. I am looking favourably on the majority of them. And we are working now towards bringing to the Parliament a much stronger package of legislation in relation to the regulation of registered organisations. And just to be clear, when you talk about registered organisations, a lot of people say, but you're attacking the unions. I say, no, hold on, look at what a registered organisation is. They are an employer organisation or an employee organisation. I am going to go after the behaviour and the system and the transaction, not the particular side. Because even Hayden, in his comments, recognised there are two sides to every transaction. So we're going to target
But these
the
are organisations rather than individual companies, right?
Well, no, they're organisations, but there can be individuals from the particular companies.
Yes, but groups, business groups, are obviously not going to be, in practice, caught up with this legislation.
Oh, no, they will be,
it
absolutely.
It might formally apply to them, but practically it won't apply to them.
I would hope it doesn't practically apply to them because they're not breaking the law, or they're not being in breach of what will be tough registered organisations regulation.
Now, this presumably is likely to be knocked back again, or let's assume it is. If you went to a double dissolution and if you were relying on a joint sitting to get these measures through later, of course it would only be the original legislation that you could put to that joint sitting.
So basically, in terms of the timetable, I mean, I obviously would hope to have the registered organisations legislation in its strengthened form in the Parliament, sort of maybe in March, I would hope. And if the Parliament is to go full term, it would be voted on in the second half of this year. You are right, though, in the event that there was a double dissolution, and certainly there is no commitment to that, but it is the original legislation that would come before
because
the joint.
Because you wouldn't have time to have it knocked back twice.
Yeah.
Do you feel, just staying with the double dissolution scenario at the moment, that an election that particularly focused on bad behaviour in the industrial field would resonate with the public? Do you think people really care about this issue?
I actually do, because I think people understand that laws are in place for reasons. When people breach those laws and the consequences are not tough enough to deter them, something's wrong. And that's what we've seen within registered organisations, and we've seen within the building and construction industry. And ultimately, Australians understand, you know, why is it that a particular industry in Australia, when the average man or woman goes to work every day in the building and construction industry, they may be subjected to fear, bullying, intimidation, thuggery. But would you send your kids, or would you recommend your kids go get a job in the construction sector, given everything we know about that sector? Clean up the sector. It's the third biggest employer in Australia. It employs over 1 million people. The majority of those people are employed by literally 100,000 small and medium businesses. Third biggest employer. You know, its ability to contribute to the Australian economy needs to be maximised. This is a government that has made its long-term agenda, well, the short-term agenda, very clear. Growth, increased productivity, increased growth and job creation. And I think Australians understand that the industrial relations portfolio is part of that broader jigsaw. We fit into that jigsaw, we're a piece of it, and if we can get it right in the IR space, we can contribute positively to that growth, to that productivity. And at the end of the day, it's all about creating jobs for Australians.
At the moment, you're obviously running a quite tough agenda on industrial relations. I just wonder, how does that translate to your relationship with the union movement? How much contact are you having with the top of unions and the top of the ACTU? And what's it like across the table?
Look, you know, I always approach meetings with anybody, regardless of whether or not we agree or disagree, in a polite manner. That's just the way I am, and I don't believe that you need to be rude to someone to get your point across. So in the meetings that I have had with the ACTU, in the meetings that I have been at where unions have been part of the conversation, they have always conducted themselves appropriately, and I have conducted myself appropriately. Because sometimes in life you can get consensus, and you should always explore the options to get consensus, especially in the IR space. That's a good thing. Doesn't mean that when we leave the meetings, we're not going to battle it out in the media or in the parliament. I'm the first to admit that we might do that. But no, certainly, you know, I approach meetings in a positive manner. I always hope that I'm given the opportunity to explain my case, for people to question me on it so that I can respond to those questions. But in the same manner, I expect others to put their case to me so I can question them on that.
So do you get consensus on some of the less controversial issues?
Within reason, yes. I think there are some recommendations coming out of the Productivity Commission review, and the government's obviously considering all of them. But certainly where, you know, even the Commission itself, when you read the Productivity Commission report, says, you know, the union supported this and employers supported this. And that's actually really refreshing. It's really refreshing. And that's something you should then always consider. If there is consensus on a recommendation, have a pretty good look at it at a government, because it probably means it should be done.
It's a relatively mild report, that, isn't it?
Look, I think that what it does do is it promotes some changes that are, if they were adopted, could positively ensure that we reduce some red tape on business, we allow business to grow. If we allow business to grow, they can create more jobs. But at the same time, very much the recommendations recognise you've got to have a strong safety net. And this government very much believes that any taxation reform we do, any IR reform we do, has to balance the need of the employer to grow. Because, you know, I'm a very simple person sometimes. Employers need employees. Employees need employers. Let's make the system work for both. So how do we ensure employers have those conditions that are conducive to them doing business and growing their business, but at the same time, on the other side of the balance sheet, you've got the positive, the strong safety net here to look after employees. That's how I approach looking at anything to do with change in the IR system.
One recommendation was that Sunday penalty rates be brought into line with Saturday rates. Are you sympathetic to that?
I'm sympathetic to the arguments that are put forward by small business. You know, I come from Western Australia. You go down south on a weekend, not that I do that very often, but, you know, certainly if I do go down south on electorate duties, it pains me to see businesses closed on a Sunday, and it pains me to hear the reason why. Okay. In saying that, though, I've made the government's position very clear. The recommendation in the Productivity Commission was not to government, it was to the Fair Work Commission. Our position is that the minimum wage and penalty rates should continue to be set by the Fair Work Commission. We are not going to change that. I would note, though, that the Fair Work Commission is currently undertaking its four-yearly review of awards. And something that's not often reported is that it was actually Bill Shorten, when he was the Industrial Relations Minister, who specifically changed the terms of the review to include a review of penalty rates. Why is it okay for Bill Shorten to do that and Brendan O'Connor doesn't jump up and down and scream, but for me to rule out any change to penalty rates, the mere fact that I mention the word penalty rates, a scare campaign is undertaken. So our position is very clear. They will stay with the Fair Work Commission. The Fair Work Commission is undertaking a review of penalty rates at the behest of Bill Shorten. They will make a decision later on this year. And I think, like everybody, we're awaiting the outcome of the decision.
Part of your ministerial responsibilities is Minister responsible for women. And you've expressed a desire to promote across the public service a gender equality program. This, I think, was pioneered by Martin Parkinson, now head of the Prime Minister's Department, formerly head of Treasury. Can you tell us about this and what progress it's making?
Look, very much, and I'm excited to now have this opportunity to work with Martin in his role as the Secretary of Prime Minister and Cabinet. Martin, or Mr. Parkinson, as you know, is a male champion of change. I had the opportunity of having some meetings with Martin last year where we discussed the role of male champions of change, but in particular, what he had done in Treasury when he was the Secretary to promote gender equality. And there has certainly been a change in the culture in Treasury since Martin rolled out this process. So I'm now going to be meeting with Martin to talk about, is there an opportunity to work with Martin Parkinson and John Lloyd, the Public Service Commissioner, to look at how this can be embraced by the wider public service. And it's strategies such as something as simple as unconscious bias training. I think, you know, it's funny when you talk to people and you say, do you think you have unconscious biases? And people say, oh no, not me. And then when they do the unconscious bias training, they come out of it and they are literally like, I had no idea I had these unconscious biases. So something as simple as unconscious bias training, as, you know, looking at resumes and saying, if there are no women resumes, send them back. Send them back. I do that. I send them back to the department. Send them back and say, when you're ready to present me with resumes that have a gender balance, come back to me. Actively go and look for women. Look for women. They are out there. Have people on the ground identifying good women. So with Martin, they're very practical strategies that we will look at now. We'll work with all of the secretaries for them to implement within their own departments. So I look really excited by this opportunity.
I'm tempted to say you should extend it to your political colleagues.
Can I look on that note? You know, I think, you know, when Malcolm became Prime Minister, I think, you know, Australians did recognise that, you know, he did do a major cabinet reshuffle. That's a really hard thing to do. We all know that. That's not easy. But I think there was a really good response to the fact that he did substantially increase the number of women in cabinet. He wants to do more. The very first decision of the Turnbull cabinet was to endorse the $100 million women's safety package. The Prime Minister and I are soon to hold a board links reception. So basically, secretaries of the departments, champions from the corporate sector, and cabinet ministers and ministers to get together to talk about What are you doing in your own individual portfolio? So, you know, in terms of, I think, you know, Malcolm's commitment to gender equality, you know, he's been known for a very long time to have that commitment. And certainly, you know, being given the portfolio of Minister for Women in Cabinet is now giving me some real opportunities, I hope, to promote change.
What about in the Liberal Party? Because it does seem quite hard to get women through the pre-selection process in numbers.
Yeah, look, we've just, and I think we openly admit that, you know, there's more that we can do as a political party. And in fact, I think there's more really across the world globally, you know, we can do to increase the number of women in Parliament. But certainly the Liberal Party is undertaking a really good look at itself across the board. I'm a big advocate of you don't know what you don't know. So in the very first instance, if you want to know what the problem is or to even see if you've got a problem, undertake an audit. I'm very supportive of all of the divisions across Australia just auditing themselves in terms of who has what position, how long have they had it, but in particular, what gender are they? Let's map it out. Let's have a look. We might be pleasantly surprised in some areas, and in other areas, if we know what the issue is, then we can look at how we address it. So in the first instance, I would very much encourage Liberal Party divisions across Australia do the first step towards it, which is undertaking the audit, because you don't know what you don't know, and that really translates across life.
One issue that we heard a great deal about last year was domestic violence. Yeah. Really got to the centre of the agenda. I wonder what progress, though, is being made out of all that public attention. Do we have any evidence that the situation is actually getting better as opposed to people talking about the need to make it better?
I think in particular in the two and a bit years that we've been in government, you've seen this literally gone from an issue that previously was Australia's dirty little secret to one where you and I are now sitting at a boardroom table and openly discussing it. I give a lot of credit to Tony Abbott for that. He put the issue of domestic violence on the national agenda.
And Rosie Batty, of course.
And I was going to say, we put it on the national agenda. We then put it as a priority issue for COAG. And as you know, if something is a priority issue for COAG, then you'll start to affect real change. We then had the announcement of Rosie as the Australian of the Year. We ensured that we worked with Rosie. We appointed her and the former Police Commissioner of the Victorian Police, Ken Lay, as our expert advisors on a panel reporting back to COAG and government. So I think you've really seen experts come together. You've seen the national focus, that national priority by government working alongside COAG. And the sector itself has very much seen leadership. But what you've also seen is a significant financial contribution by government. We allocated $100 million to the second action plan under the National Action Plan to reduce violence against women and their children. We had the announcement last year of the $100 million women's safety package. We're now in the final stages of the $30 million attitudinal change campaign that the Commonwealth government's working with the state and territory governments on, because we understand you also need to tackle the root cause of the problem, change the attitudes that contribute to violence, which is very much gender equality. So I think you now have that national leadership. With that national leadership, working with people such as Rosie Batty and Ken Lay, we now have an issue that is openly talked about. But not only that, you have governments almost competing in terms of what they can do by way of positive policy and positive action. And that's actually a really good thing.
Can we just finish up on the question of Senate voting? You're a senator, and the government is looking to see if it can get through legislation to change the Senate voting system to stop minor parties gaming the system, which would lead to less micro players in the Senate. How important do you think this is? How necessary? And what do you think the chances of a deal are?
Well, certainly, you know, you get the Senate you vote for, and the Australian people, under the rules, have got the Senate they voted for. So I don't dispute the current makeup of the Senate because the system allowed it. But certainly, you know, flowing on from federal elections, there always is an inquiry into the election. We've had that inquiry. We now have the recommendations, and certainly the government is considering them. Senate reform is always difficult. I'll leave that to Matthias Cormann, though. But, you know, we're open about it is something that we are looking at.
Michaela Cash, thank you very much for talking with us today.
It's an absolute pleasure to be with you, Michelle. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
And that's all from the Conversations Politics podcast. Thank you to my producer, Pat Hutchins. We'll be back with another interview soon.